London calling. This is London calling on Longwave. London calling. This is Westminster.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Calm down. I'm okay. With a combat unit, it's armed with automatic weapons.
Come on, Mrs. Jones. You've got to go to your second job now. You've got to earn extra money to pay the bedroom tax.
I'm very lucky. I've got a second job in a chemical plant. Yeah, I'm making fluoride for Syria. They're shipping it to Syria.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
My lords, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to join Chris Everard in an undisclosed location deep under Buckingham Palace in Winston Churchill's war bunker.
Let's never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
God damn it, boy! These Brits are coming to get us!
Welcome, my friends, to the Winston Everard.
My husband and I are not amused.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
Deep from inside the former communist bloc, where we now torture American citizens in Poland and the Balkan states, we're tuning in to the Chris Everard Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Chris Everard, and we are broadcasting live on the Truth Frequency. Welcome back. This is Chris Everard broadcasting live from London. My special guest today is Mr. Vinny Eastwood from New Zealand. Vinny, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
One of the things I'd like to discuss with you, and I'm always interested in discussing this with New Zealanders and also Australians, is what is the current state of play with the popularity of the British royal family in New Zealand?
I don't know. Honestly, not too much fanfare about it.
Really?
No.
I mean, is there a member
apart
of the
from
royal
that
family?
Royal wedding, you know, where it was so classic. One of those bishops or whatever it was at the Abbey had a giant upside down pentagram on his back.
I saw that.
Full view. David Icke showed me that. I thought it was classic.
Yes, absolutely. Well, unfortunately, there's lots of religious regalia that does have weird pagan and satanic kind of iconography. There's a giant cathedral. It's one of the largest cathedrals in Europe, a French town called Amiens. It's an awful place, actually. It's like a concrete wasteland. And, you know, they have these giant stained glass windows in these cathedrals, and it's got an inverted pentagram actually in the window, in the stained glass window of this cathedral. It's meant to be, you know, for Christ. But it obviously, you know, the Vatican has been exposed over the years. Do New Zealanders understand what's been going on with the VATI leaks and the Vatican Bank scandals? Has that been covered in the New Zealand media?
No. Of course
it hasn't.
Of course they don't.
Really?
All right.
Wow.
Do the people of England understand all of that? No? No.
Well, they understand that Jimmy Savile rather suspiciously was given the equivalent of a knighthood by the Pope, and they're all now wondering what on earth was going on. And they also, amazingly, most people in Britain do know now that Prince Charles was not only friends with Jimmy Savile, but was actually visiting Jimmy Savile's house
in
Scotland.
Can I make a detraction a little bit here? When we make generalizations about what the people know, when people say things like, most people, have you talked to most people? And the answer is obviously not. Nobody knows what most people think because nobody does polling. Have you done polling? I haven't done. But what I see is the effects. Okay, so let's act under the assumption that everybody in England knew that the Pope and the satanic Vatican or whatever were all full-on scumbaggery. Did everybody in the whole of England convert from Catholicism that day when that information came out? No. There was no spike. There was nothing even noticeable. So the answer is people don't give a frack, all right? And I think that is actually, you've asked me a lot about what New Zealanders think about this, what New Zealanders think about that. My answer is New Zealanders, on the whole, don't think at all.
Oh, that's terrible.
And that's unfortunate because it's the same for everybody everywhere. And it's not New Zealanders or anybody else's fault per se that they can't think. It's been forced upon them. Okay, it's an enforced ignorance, and it's really sad because they. It's kind of like, how could you come into the world all of a sudden? You are thrust into a grand designed prison, okay? And you don't even know it's a prison. You're not told it's a prison. And then you start being educated in this prison. And they tell you, you have to be a slave, you have to be a slave. Being a slave is good. And you're like, really? That doesn't make any sense. Shut up. You're going to get detention if you don't think being a slave is good. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, that's trauma-based mind control, isn't it? That's what I figured out that high school was, trauma-based mind control.
Absolutely.
Were you traumatized in high school? I was. I don't know.
Absolutely. I mean, if you managed to make your way through a whole school day at my school without being stabbed, you did very well, let alone whether you'd learn anything that day. That's the kind of school I went to.
Mate.
And it was extremely violent. And it was violent from the management top level down to, the what I call the shop floor level of the school classroom. Mm. The top boss, the headmaster, actually got busted. This is how bad my school was. He actually ended up teaching at Cambridge University, and he was such a megalomaniac and he was such a psychopath. He actually got busted at the University of Cambridge for telling Master of Degree students, which are kind of grown adults, not to walk on the grass. He was such a control freak. He used to stand on the roof of the building of my school with a pair of naval binoculars, actually, like a spy. That's how he used to spend his lunch hours.
Sweet.
It was incredible. It was like going to Colditz rather than going to school.
It's not as bad as some of the stories I've heard from South African schools. I think one of the teachers was just selling drugs to the students and what have you. One of the teachers was completely crazy, and he brought in this bird that had been run over by a car. Like it's flat, like a frisbee. And he brings it into the class, puts it in a shoebox, gives it water and seed and stuff, tries to feed it for a couple of... It's dead! It's freaking dead, bro! And then a couple of weeks later, he throws it out the window like a frisbee and says, yeah, it's all better now. another mate was telling me...
Weird.
He was... they have these 15, 20-foot fences or something like that around their school. And on the other side of the fences was all these slums with all these homeless people and bums everywhere. And every single time, not every once in a while, but every single time they would accidentally kick a ball over the fence, a bum would dive on it and stab it with a knife.
Oh, dear. Well, I have to say to the listeners
And that's not the best part. The best part is that the children, in revenge for getting their balls stabbed, would kill the bum by throwing rocks at him.
Oh, dear.
It was rough,
is
man.
Is that South Africa?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's after Mandela.
yeah, absolutely. I have to say that England, where I grew up, is famous for having the aristocratic public schools. But when we say public school in England, what we actually mean is private schools that charge about, usually around £15,000 a year to send your children. And obviously they're run as businesses. And the reason that so many children from the public school system end up with drug habits is because they basically they're allowed to do whatever they want at school. And I just want to say to parents, I mean, I've been a lecturer at Goldsmiths in London, and I've lectured at many of the top universities, and I have many of those students from the public school system. And I can tell you now, they've confessed to me what goes on, basically because they're not really going to school. They're actually spending their time inside a business, and the business makes its profits from those children. Those public schools let the kids do whatever they want. They let them swear. They let them go out to discotheques. When they're meant to be studying. They let them cheat in their exams. They let them take their drugs because, they don't want to lose those students, because every single student is a unit of monetary profit for the public school system. And then the government school system in England is really on its last knees. I mean, it's really bad. I mean, I could dedicate several shows to telling people what I've seen from the inside.
I like it's how disgusting. You said last knees instead of last legs, because they already lost them legs a long time ago.
That's right. Is that similar in New Zealand? Is it kind of like that in New Zealand?
Absolutely. And the UN Agenda 21 protocols for education are being implemented here big time. They've, I think, about the year after I left school, they implemented what are called unit standards. Now, previously we had school certificate, which was you work all year and 100% of your assessment is based upon an exam at the end of the year. Really, really hard to do. You've got to study an entire year's worth of work in order to hopefully pass the exam. And now they have about the last part of the year is only 30% exam, and all the rest of it is like 70% of you get judged throughout the year. And it's so much easier that you don't even have to be that bright in order to get like A pluses and what have you. Like,
Oh, really?
A person of average intelligence could get A plus. A person of genius intelligence would just sit there bored out of their minds and probably wind up getting detention for fiddling or disturbing other students.
I heard a very great story. It's a total dumbing down, then.
Well, that's the New World Order agenda in a nutshell, isn't it? You know, making everybody stupid. So. They won't have any idea what the heck is going on. You can just You can so like somebody says, "Oh, the truth has to eventually come out." Are you joking? Have you looked at history? They can keep stuff secret forever. Forever. I mean, look, it's about personal choice, okay? So if you go into the school system and you say, I'm going to have a personal choice here to tell the teacher, frack you, you're teaching me BS, you know you're teaching me BS, I ain't going to do it. Try and send me to detention. I ain't going to turn up. Try and call my parents.
What you've just described there is you've described me at my school, because when I was 7 years old, I used to stand up against the teachers and I used to actually hold up, you know, whatever textbook they'd given us. And I used to say, and I was 7 years old, I used to say, why have you chosen this book and why are you teaching us this? And I'd say, sit down, Everard. And, you know, I was a rebel and they earmarked me as a rebel when I was 7 years old. By the time I got to my bigger school, there was a file on me, and they actually showed me the file on me, and it was already half an inch thick, and I was 11 years old.
he's got a record.
Yeah, I did. I have a very big record.
It reminds me of what George Carlin said. He says, I've got this real problem. I think... and that's it. It's a real problem when you think.
Yeah, there was a famous quote from Ronald Reagan who, let's face it, he wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer. But he was good at making public speeches, and, you know, that's why they hired him as a puppet president. But he did do an excellent speech all about his education years, and he said one of the biggest benefit of being president of the United States is that on the day that I was sworn in, all my school records were made secret. Because he was one of these flunkers at school. But, you know, I say this in many broadcasts, you do not need any qualification whatsoever to be a government minister or a member of parliament, which I find amazing, especially considering that they hire their own wives in many instances to be the secretary of their office in the Houses of Parliament. Now, is she qualified to be a secretary? No. You know, they and the elite, and when I say the elite, I'm obviously talking about the royal political elite. I'm talking about Buckingham Palace. They want unqualified people. In actual fact, they want unqualified people that have got skeletons in their closets, because it's much easier, obviously, to blackmail them. Mm. Absolutely.
Apparently, there's this massive file that MI6 or MI5, one of the intelligence have got, about all of the famous and powerful people in England or something like that. Like, they got dirt on everybody. And if you ever step out of line, you ever start talking bad about us? Yeah. Oh, matey potatey, we've got a good way to make everybody think you're a scumbag, which you actually are.
That's right.
But right at the moment, you're lucky because you're our scumbag.
Yeah. And also, obviously, they also invent evidence as well. This is also something which is going on now in the digital age. When you go and see these movies with these fantastic digital special effects, like Spider-Man, you know, you see Spider-Man going down Manhattan, down Fifth Avenue, and it looks as real could be. I mean, nowadays, digital video technology, Hollywood technology, if you can think it, you can put it on the screen. And not only can you put it on the screen, but it can look so real that, you know, people just would believe it. Now, that exact same technology is also being used to frame people as well. Photoshop, Pixelmator, RenderMan, all of the big high-end animation systems. And we know this. We know it from, say, for example, the fake Bin Laden videos. We know it from the videos that have been released, you know, trying to make normal members of the public in countries like Iraq look terrible. Well, they're animations, everyone. And very much what you see on the TV news, elements of what you see on the TV news are not real. And it's like a blurring of fact and fiction. It is actually a mind control merry-go-round, which you're seeing when you tune into the mainstream media.
I wondered what the limits to mind control were and whether or not you could actually derive some benefit in it. What if you could brainwash somebody into thinking that they're not part of a collective, that they're actually an individual, that they don't want to be a slave, that they want to fight for freedom, that they want to help rather than hurt people? What if you brainwashed somebody into thinking that? What if you brainwashed people, used a mind control technique to teach people the truth?
Yeah, well, what you've just described there is Scientology. I mean, Scientology is one of these subjects that, you know, people shoot from the hip without actually studying properly what is going on in Scientology. When you see the top Hollywood people who are members of Scientology, you know, you have to look at it in the cold light of day. Those people are not idiots. Those people in Hollywood, you know, if you look at the output of Hollywood, it takes great skill to do what they do. There's great amounts of work that go into creative shows like The Simpsons, South Park, you know, Star Wars films. You need the best editors. You need the best animators. You need the best actors.
Did you see the South Park episode about Scientology?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, brilliant.
And the reason that you've got top Hollywood people as members of Scientology. And I'm not talking about the high level celebrities. It's not just them. There's many people that you do not see on the cinema screen or on the television screen who work in Hollywood who are also Scientologists. The reason that these very intelligent, they are on average much more educated than the average American person. The reason that they've got involved in Scientology is because Scientology actually tells them about the New World Order. It actually tells them about brotherhoods. It tells them about magic. It tells them about government corruption. It tells them about people with criminal minds. It actually tells them, it uses a special kind of language, Scientology. There's many initials which are used to, you know, like somebody with a suppressive personality is what me and you, Vinny, would describe as a douchebag politician.
Mm. Well, I found very interesting about the Scientology belief structure is that they actually believe, and the science fiction writer L. Ron Hubbard created this religion, they actually believe, what was it, B-52 bombers travelled across space in order to deliver human souls to a volcano.
That's right. I think it was real beings. They were real humans, and they were placed in volcanoes, and then atomic bombs were dropped into the volcanoes. And the spirits of those humans, called Thetans, are what we're dealing with now.
The fact that they actually used B-52 bombers, which weren't invented until the Second World War. Were they B-52s? I forget what kind of plane they were, but they were a World War II bomber.
They weren't planes. It just said that they were in spaceships which resembled, I think, DC-10s or something like that. But what I was going to say is that they are members of Scientology because they have been told about the New World Order, and they have been told that it's L. Ron Hubbard's technology, the clear meters and the other different types of Hubbard technology, which is going to cure the New World Order. And they see corrupt people not as corrupt people, but as suppressive personalities. They call them SPs. And the recruitment drive, and they actually have a celebrity center in Los Angeles, in Hollywood. The recruitment drive of Scientology is taking elements of truth, elements of corruption, which really do exist, which all the truthers in the truth movement, people like John Lennon, Monsignor Bruce Kent, Noam Chomsky, Norman Finkelstein, all of the, you know, main kind of authors that expose corruption, Michael Moore and all these people, Scientology is very, very cleverly using that information, which is real and which is true, and then creating a tapestry of amazing kind of mind-blowing stuff, you know, which is really basically what the Book of Enoch, the Book of Revelations, and all the apocryphal ancient texts do. I mean, you know, the Book of Revelations is like a sci-fi extravaganza from the ancient world. And you see, L. Ron Hubbard was not a silly man. He was a very clever man, but he was a disciple of Aleister Crowley. And the negative sides of Hubbard's career as a magician is kept secret from those Scientologists, and it's very unfortunate that these very bright, clever people in Hollywood, and also in other countries, and it's not just Hollywood, have been duped.
Can I make an observation?
Yeah.
It's a lack of self-analysis. Have you heard of the Ballad of the Cosmic Schmuck?
No.
No? Okay. Let's say you're the cosmic schmuck. Cosmic meaning big, schmuck meaning idiot, right? And you say to yourself, am I the cosmic schmuck? It's extremely unlikely that you'll actually be the cosmic schmuck because you're questioning yourself. But if it never occurs to you, and you never ask yourself that question, am I the cosmic schmuck? Then you probably are. You understand? Mm. The more intelligent, the more confident in yourself that you are, the more likely it is that you'll be able to lie to yourself effectively without questioning your decision.
Mm-hmm.
And thus that ability is transposed and actually given to other people, because I think psychopaths are really good at manipulating people because they don't actually show you their face, okay? They never show you their face. They show you a mirror image. They show you what you think you want to see. They tell you what you want to hear. And then they use that to bring all your defenses down so that they can then manipulate and control and then eventually destroy and suck the life out of you. You know, vampirically kind of thing. Kind of like being in a trance. And this is something that happens in any situation where you have power or control. Any situation with power or control, that where it's accumulated, that's where psychopaths will gravitate to. They'll gravitate towards, I think American Medical Journal released a list of employment opportunities for psychopaths, right? This is where the industries that they work in. Business, media, politics, medicine, law, religion. You know? And you think to yourself, what are all the main power and control centers of the entire planet
That's things that influence our main culture?
Yeah.
Yeah, what you've just said there, Vin, is that they are the so-called pillars of society.
Yeah. Well, actually, they're the pillage of society.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
That's what they do.
They absolutely are.
It's going to come to a war. Like we're already in the middle of like this massive quagmire. Okay, it's almost like the truth movement versus the scumbaggery movement are sort of engaged in our own little Vietnam right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, one side's obviously eventually going to lose, but the problem is you're completely lost in the fog of war right now that you cannot see or grasp your victory.
Absolutely. Now, we have a very short break coming up. When we come back, we've just got the last section of the show. Stay with us. It's a short break of 90 seconds. This is The Truth Frequency, live from London. Welcome back. This is Chris Everard, broadcasting live from London on the Truth Frequency Radio Network in the USA, on AM from Stirling in Scotland, and also on Radio Calabria on FM in Italy. And my special guest today is Mr. Vin Eastwood, who's a bon viveur and an all-round interesting dude who's interviewed a lot of activists and authors. And I'd just like to say to you, Vin, that there's a quote here from Edward Snowden, and he says, "A child born today will grow up with no conception of privacy at all. They'll never know what it means to have a private moment to themselves, an unrecorded, unanalyzed thought, and that's a problem because privacy matters. Privacy is what allows us to determine who we are and who we want to be."
Privacy, as I've quoted myself as saying, privacy is freedom. When you no longer have privacy, you no longer have freedom. It's just that simple.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, like you were saying earlier in the show, all these people who say, you know, well, if you've got nothing to hide, you know, why are you worried about it? And obviously, when you turn around to those people and say, okay, well, you know, we'll have your house surrounded by security cameras and we'll follow you down the road with a camera crew. And even when you go to bed, there'll be a camera crew with microphones there, you know. They don't like it.
I did that to a cop once. He's like, "Can you turn your camera off, please?" And I go, "Why? You don't have anything to hide, do you?" He got really pissed off.
That's right. They don't like that kind of, they don't like that kind of thing. I filmed people for my documentaries on the street in many different countries. I have to say that my experience is I've been lucky, and I was filming actually in Italy. And the Italian police were very good with me. And, you know, they said, who are you and why are you filming these government buildings? And I explained to them. And, you know, they were very friendly. But most of the time I see little clips on video sharing websites of the police putting their hands over the lenses of cameras. Well,
I have a great anecdote here to add into an article just came out. Rialto, California, have passed a law that mandates that every time their police officers have any interaction with the public, they have to turn their camera on. They have a little camera attached to their sunglasses.
That's right.
That is a microphone as well. It reduced the amount of police brutality by 60%.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
And it reduced the amount of police complaints by 80%. So, can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
When the government passes a law to surveil the people, I think they should actually only surveil themselves. If you're a person, a normal individual or what have you, you should never be surveilled. All right, basically, unless there's a warrant or probable cause, some kind of actual reason. But if you're a government employee or a police officer or somebody that's otherwise in a level of fiduciary responsibility, whenever you're performing your duties, I think it should be recorded to ensure accountability because, hey, all the ordinary people have no power. There's no ability for them to actually really do a whole lot of corrupt stuff to a large degree and cover it up because they don't work in the establishment. They're not part of the clique. The people who are part of the clique, on the other hand, would never want that kind of surveillance measure to be implemented on them because it's like, damn, they're going to see the video of me raping those small children. Damn, I can't do that anymore. I'd have to get another job.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say to people, if ever you get your camcorder out or your iPhone and the police try and stop you from doing that and you are in a public space, you can quote to them that you are actually enabled under law to be able to use your camera in a public space. I think really they're going to start tightening up on this because, you know, I'm making this new film called Wow, World of Wonder. You can actually see the trailer. If you go to wowthemovie.net, you can see that me and a lot of people around the planet, I'm assembling this big team of people that use mini helicopter drone cameras, and we've been filming all the ancient sites around the world. And we've been filming in Egypt. We filmed Stonehenge, Avebury. We filmed Venice. And we filmed everywhere. We filmed in the USA as well just recently. And the police obviously, you know, see our drone cameras. And you can see in their eyes what's going through their minds. They're thinking, you know, this shouldn't be allowed. But we speak to all of the police. I mean, they came up to us in London and we were talking to them. And they asked to have a look at our drone cameras. We showed it to them. And I think what they're going to try and do is they're going to try and clamp down on it, which is, you know, bad because we're just members of the public and we're filming public spaces. We're not invading privacy with our flying cameras.
Well, it's one mind at a time. I mean, and back to the Vietnam War analogy, part of the U.S. plan was to win the hearts and minds of the people by giving them candy and fresh socks and what have you, you know. Just like, you know, we've actually got that same kind of campaign on the streets. You got to convert police officers now. You got to convert politicians, you know. And being devoted to the truth, being willing to suffer death threats, and maybe even at the cost of your life. Nobody wants to die, but unfortunately, it is part of the realm in which we live.
Yes.
This is a religion. Okay, unfortunately, that's my conclusion, that the truth is, in and of itself, a religion. Not unlike science, not unlike Catholicism. There are those things. Now, what a religion, or rather what good I define as, is restraint. Okay. Evil, I define as lack of restraint, and those are the basic simple principles. And when you first start out knowing the truth, being into this indoctrinated religion of, oh my God, there's a new world order, they're evil, they're scumbags, they're going to kill us and everything like that, you got all these different paths to go down, all these different directions. And it's only once you've actually kind of stumbled along a whole bunch of different rabbit holes that you realize that it doesn't actually matter how deep that rabbit hole goes. What matters is how far to the side of the rabbit hole you can get before you hit the wall. Right? You know what I'm saying? And what I find is interesting is that if you use humor, smiles, and manipulative tactics, you know, to be honest, I'm actually a fan of manipulation, all right? by its very definition, manipulation isn't actually a bad thing. Okay, you can manipulate a pen to write a great art work or something of that nature, like a poem. But thing is, manipulation's being misused. Okay, if you come up with the right words, the right phrase, at the right time, you can turn somebody who is otherwise a freedom-hating slave into a freedom-loving zealot. Okay, same thing happened to me. Same thing happened to nearly everybody else in this movement that I've talked to. Somebody, somewhere, at some point, gave you that information. Somebody instilled it within you. And what I really get frustrated with is people within this movement who don't do anything, don't wake anybody up, only sit around listening to other people on the radio and watching other people's YouTube videos, not doing any of themselves, getting depressed and saying that nobody's waking up and there's no point trying, okay? Well, of course there's no freaking point trying, because you're not actually trying, you stupid knob, okay? For frack's sake, there's an entire planet full of people. There's 7 billion people on the planet. Why do you want to hang around people who never encourage you? People who never actually teach you anything? We've all got these old friends from high school and what have you. You know how many friends of mine from high school I'm still in touch with? None of them. None of them from university, none of them from primary school, none of them from any of my previous employment opportunities, none of them. I'm not in touch with any of them at all, because they're not into reality. They don't like it. Some people think that reality doesn't exist. I'll tell you what, shoot yourself in the head, okay? No, seriously. If you think perception is reality, find a gun, shoot yourself in the head, and try to perceive that that bullet won't travel through your skull and kill you. Okay?
Yeah.
If that's okay, courage of your convictions. I've got courage of my convictions, knowing that I can actually make a difference in people's lives. I've had people who were about to commit suicide before they listened to my radio show, started laughing about how terrible everything is, like I do, and they suddenly realize, you know, life's actually worth living. Even Donald Trump was about to commit suicide this one time. Walking across a bridge, he's about to throw himself off. And as he steps onto the bridge, firstly, he gets encountered by this Vietnam vet who had no legs, who was, using his hands to propel himself along on a skateboard. And he's selling pencils. And he says, "Mr. Trump, would you buy a pencil? Would you buy a pencil, please?" You know, reaching up to him. Mr. Trump goes, "Sure, I'm going to kill myself anyway. Just give him $100. Here we are, $100 for a pencil." And the veteran goes, "Well, thank you, Mr. Trump, but I have to give you your change." And Trump's just like, no, it's fine. He keeps walking. The guy actually is just wheeling after him on the skateboard, saying, "Mr. Trump, I need you to give you your change. Mr. Trump, please stop." Mm-hmm. About halfway across the bridge, Donald Trump decided, "You know what? I don't actually have it that bad. I'm not going to top myself." You know?
Yeah, well, you know, unfortunately, yeah, that is good, but unfortunately, if the guy selling the pencils had tried to do that with Himmler or Joseph Mengele or Hitler, they would have picked that veteran up and thrown him over the bridge.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are psychopaths that are actually in senior positions of government.
There's another thing that kind of occurred to me. I would never implement it because it provokes too many moral grey areas and too much potential for the extermination of innocence, is psychopathy. If you can be clinically diagnosed, 100% absolutely diagnosed psychopath, should you be executed for it? Right? And the answer is absolutely not, because, you know, the only thing that would happen is psychopaths would wind up controlling that system, and they'd wind up eliminating the low-level psychopaths. You know, the ones on the ones on the street that would kill you for the money in your wallet kind of thing, who just love fracking things up. Those would be the ones that wind up getting executed, and the ones executing them would be the judges and the lawyers and so on and so forth, or even worse, psychopaths than they are.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to say that the New World Order would not work, and it would not be able to corral and sheepdog manage the human population were it not for the Pentagon, the Ministry of Defense, all of the police forces around the planet, actually specifically employing people with psychopathic tendencies. I've seen many police officers when I was living in London who, you know, they would turn up if they'd been called to the scene of a crime. Maybe one of my, I remember a time when my neighbor called the police to report that his car had been stolen, and the police officer was trying to arrest him, my neighbor. And, you know, the guy that turned up was a complete idiot. Well, I say idiot, but he was an actual psychopath. Then I met a British army soldier who'd actually deserted the army because he joined up. He came from a very underprivileged area. And he, you know, like many people, joined the army because that was the only thing that he could think of doing. And there was no employment there. And after a while, he realized, oh, dear, I've made the biggest mistake of my life. And he told me that there were psychopaths who enjoyed killing who were actually deliberately sought out and employed by the Ministry of Defense.
Wow.
And they were so dangerous that they actually kept them separate from the rest of the men in the battalions in a kind of prison barracks. And they had their own little kind of brick cells. And these are the guys that, you know, were there, and they were loving any opportunity to go to Iraq, Afghanistan, anywhere where they would have a gun, live ammunition, and a knife, and they would be let loose. They couldn't wait to get out there and start killing people. And these guys were sought out by the Ministry of Defense officers.
Well, yeah, and the same thing happens with police officers, actually. The aptitude tests, when they ask you questions about morals, ethics, those kind of things, and when they test your intelligence, they're not looking for people that have high moral ethics and high intelligence. They're looking for people that have no morals and very low intelligence. Right. A friend of mine was rejected from the Australian police because his IQ test came back too high. And they say, sorry, no, we can't have you in the police, which explains a lot of Australian police. You know, and just think about it. How many cops have you talked to who have wowed you with their intelligence? I haven't spoken to one. Ever.
I did meet one police officer.
Apart from Albert Burgess, who took the who took control and actually arrested a judge in an English court. He's former cop though as well. In fact, here's another thing. Current police employment means you're an idiot. Former police employment means you're actually probably pretty bright because you realize how bad it was and got out, right?
Yeah.
I interviewed, and in fact, one of the best interviews, and the reason why it's still on the Vinnie Eastwood Show featured interviews page, is Grace Hayden, 15-year prosecuting sergeant with the New Zealand Police. And this was back in 2010 when I interviewed her. And she told me something I'll never ever forget. The New Zealand Police are so corrupt that you will either become corrupted by them, or you will leave. And I left.
Wow. Yeah. Now, Vinny, we're going to come up to the last part of the show, and there's a very important subject that's close to my heart, and these people fascinate me, and they are the Maoris of New Zealand. Could you just tell people, you know, who've never been to New Zealand, what the state of play is with the indigenous Maori people? Because obviously, you know, they were there, and then all of these European, mostly British settlers just turned up. And before we all turned up, I presume the Maoris have been there for thousands of years. Is that the case?
One Maori scholar who I spoke to said, oh, we've always been here.
I see.
She didn't provide any evidence to that extent, but she was pretty onto it. Very, very respected within the community. Some of the elders that I've spoken to have said that the when you got to understand Māori, you got to go back to the beginning. Okay, so Māori tradition says they came there around about 900 AD or so, right?
Okay.
And then they lived there. There were these big birds called moa that were like these giant ostrich-type creatures that they killed mm-hmm. all off. Many of the tribes, not all of them, mind you, in fact, the majority of the tribes didn't resort to this, but many of the tribes, particularly inland, took to cannibalism. In fact, that was... Captain James Cook's first encounter with Maori as he launched a longboat, and he didn't find any of his men that went to shore. So he went right. looking around.
I'd just like to say at that point that these histories that we are taught at school about the indigenous people in the lands that were taken over by Buckingham Palace, that's what we're talking about here, folks.
Yeah.
A lot of those histories are deliberately bullshit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I'm telling you I'm telling you the stuff that they don't teach you in school.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So James Cook came here, sent a longboat ashore. Every single one of the people on that longboat got eaten, right, within hours of landing by a really aggressive Maori tribe. Now, mm-hmm. after that, the English settlers started coming in, and they found out that the Maori were very easy to manipulate. You could give them alcohol, and they'd start getting drunk and violent, and then you could just say, oh, this person's drunk and violent, let's take their land off them. So they did, and then the Maori got really effed off about it after they sobered up, and then decided that mm-hmm. they would have some kind of retribution. There were a couple mm-hmm. of tribes that made a really good go of commercialism. In fact, Parihaka was an interesting place. I've got a couple of stones from Parihaka that one of my listeners gave me from the site itself, sitting on my mantle, and they were really, really successful. They were getting trade up to wazoo. They had their own trading flags and everything like that. It was called the United Tribes flag. And so the English said, these guys are beating us at our own game, so let's kill them all, every single one of them.
Oh,
and confiscate all of their property, their land, and their businesses and everything. And they did. And so the Maori got really effed off.
I presume this was in the 1800s, was it?
I think so, yeah. And,
yeah.
So naturally they got really effed off with, about that, and a big war started. But the war started after the treaty, okay? Because mm-hmm. the Maori were actually mm-hmm. afraid of the French. The French were really, really vicious, much more vicious than the British.
Oh, yeah.
And when we had a treaty signed up, draft document called the Littlewood Treaty, it was found not too long ago, the original document, these chiefs at the time didn't even debate that treaty. They signed mm-hmm. it really, really quickly because they hated the French and they wanted the protection of Her Majesty. There were a couple of rebel tribes who said that they were going to invade the Auckland region and kill everybody and put the babies on pikes and all of that kind of stuff, who were resisted by both Maori and British forces. So there's there's not only a rivalry between tribes, but a rivalry between the British government and certain tribes as well at the same time, as well as the French. You know, it's kind of like a whole mishmash of rivalries all going around. And that's all underpinned by the fact that there were civilizations here before Maori even got here. Even elders have spoken of what eventually, after many, many, many years, became known as kind of like wood nymphs and fanciful creatures and what have you.
Yeah.
According to some of the... Kaumatua, who are, you know, Maori elders, they said that these were actually real people back in the day, and they had red hair, pale skin, and they had an extraordinary knowledge of cartography. They knew the stars. They worshipped the elements and the sun. There are artifacts all over this country that are that are thousands upon thousands of years old. Ancient walls, ancient huts, ancient bullhorns where you would pour water in and you would pray to the sun. There are these. Mm-hmm. The Maori call them the surveyors. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, within Maoridom, the surveyors is a very closely kept secret. They uncovered a raft of coffins buried high in the hills in the South Island once, and none of the skeletons in those coffins, just bear in mind Maldives didn't bury themselves in coffins at all, the Europeans did that, and these coffins were thousands of years old, and some local tribesmen within the area were asked by the discoverers, are these your people, and what do we do with their bones and everything, and they go, do what you want, these are not our people. They predate us by thousands of years. You get called racist for just saying this. By just producing archaeological evidence, you get called racist in this country. Okay?
Really?
There's a thing called a treaty industry. And what happened is, in the Treaty of Waitangi, it was basically a scam. Okay, the Maori were really difficult to defeat in battle. They invented trench warfare. They invented guerrilla warfare. They're wow. Unbelievable. Really, just in terms of military tactics, they were the most dangerous people on earth at the time. And even today, the Maori battalion in World War II is one of the most infamous battalions of that generation as well. Wow. They were the only they were one of only two battalions, I think, in the world that the Germans were known to fear. And this is the thing: you have a warrior spirit, okay, that warrior spirit needs to be cleansed. As far as the establishment is concerned, so that you can prevent any kind of uprising, any kind of resistance. And I spoke with Tamaiti, who's a chief Maori activist. Like, he's just, if you want to talk about a Maori activist in terms of, I'm an activist because I'm Maori, he's the man. And he's a really nice guy. Like, he's actually quite lovely. And he's fully tattooed up. He looks really intimidating. But he's just got, you know, a bit of a belly, and he's just in his garage, you know, painting stuff with his little grandkids and everything like that. And then they bust him for running this training camp where he's teaching people how to use automatic weapons, teaching them how to make Molotov cocktails and stuff like that, because he knew about the New World Order. So naturally, the government surveils his entire town of 2,000 people, spends millions of dollars, and then raids the town, okay? And they point guns at women, children, old ladies, and then call them the terrorists.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a tactic which we've seen everywhere. That is absolutely fascinating information. Now, we are coming up to the last couple of minutes of the show. Vinny, would you like to tell people where they can find you? I mean, are you basically findable through your own website?
If you search Vinny Eastwood, Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. You will be able to find me. It's quite easy. VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Also have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/Mr News, Guerrilla Media. And if you want to have any further look into some of these things that I've been talking about, you can basically search names or topics on my YouTube channel or on Google plus my name. And the chances are fairly good that you'll find something on what you're talking about. So if you want to talk about ancient New Zealand censored history, the guy I'd be looking for is Martin Doutre, Doutre. He's a really cool guy there, Martin.
Well, Vinny, what I would like, I mean, I'm absolutely fascinated by these ancient artifacts in Australia and New Zealand. And maybe we can do a show again in the future and have one of these guys on as a joint guest between us.
I don't see why not.
Okay, now, Vinny, thank you very much. It's been a great show, and we'll definitely invite you back.
All right, thanks.
Take care, everyone. See you next week.